We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Good afternoon. Welcome to CETA's EdWeb webinar, Navigating the Digital Shift, Empowering Digital Instructional Materials Implementation. I am Christine Fox, Deputy Executive Director for CETA, and we're excited to have with us today Andre De Leon, who's an Education Programs Professional for the Nevada Department of Education. So go ahead and say hi, Andre. And then also we have Allison Hart, who's an Instructional Materials Specialist at the Florida Department of Education.
Hello.
We're excited. Hi, everybody.
We're so excited they're here as CETA members and as state leaders, and we're excited to share the refresh of our DMAPS online portal. So I'm going to let them off the hook for a few minutes while we dig into our discussion today, and we look forward to your participation. We do have EdWeb team as well as CETA team supporting the chat, so we encourage you to ask questions and share. So for those of you that are interested in continuing the conversation, we hope that you join our EdWeb community. It's edweb.net/digital-content. There is no cost associated with participation. All the resources are free, and we upload all the content from this and all other CETA webinars into that community. We also post recordings and have online discussions. So we encourage you to join and also to participate. So having said that, we're going to dive right into our content today. Many of you may be familiar with CETA's DMAPS website, and our focus today is a refresh site, and then we're including examples from two states on how they have leveraged leadership at the state level to support digital instructional materials implementation. So for our agenda today, I'm doing the introductions. I will provide a demonstration of the DMAPS website, and then we'll hear the state perspective from two state leaders that I recently introduced, Andre from the Nevada Department of Education and Allison from the Florida Department of Education. We also will host a question and answer and discussion at the end. So again, please be sure to post questions and comments in the chat and use the question tool. A little bit for those of you not familiar about CETA, CETA is a national nonprofit organization. We provide support for our members who are digital learning leaders from all 50 states, U.S. territories, as well as the District of Columbia. We also have multiple affiliate organizations. I see some are online today. We provide opportunities for advocacy around policy and practice related to digital learning. We provide professional learning opportunities for our members and our partners. And then we provide the opportunity for state leaders and their affiliate counterparts to have interstate collaboration. So to learn more about CETA, you can visit us at CETA.org/about and learn more about our organization as a whole and our initiatives. Before we dive into the content, we would like to thank the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for their funding support for this particular project, as well as the webinar today. CETA has multiple resources. We have had, over the last 4 to 5 years, developed a variety of resources in support of the shift to digital instruction materials, one of which is the DMAPS website, which we'll dig into shortly. In addition, last year, we launched multiple resources around instructional materials. One was a set of state procurement case studies we launched in the fall. Four states highlighted how both districts as well as the private sector can navigate the procurement process in those states. We launched last winter the Guide to Quality Instruction Materials, and this is an online toolkit that provides best practices on how to plan for, select, and implement instructional materials, the most important part being quality, whether digital or print. And we will be releasing a refresh of that site later this spring, early summer. In addition, based on the data sets from the DMAPS website, we published in June 2017, Navigating the Digital Shift Report, which was a phase two. That was a data analysis from all 50 states as well as several territories. And then we have also publish other reports outside of the instruction material set. One is on broadband. The Broadband Imperative 2 was launched in 2016. Our original broadband report in 2012 was adopted by the FCC as part of the E-rate modernization process. And then we also have the Guide to Digital Learning. It is also an online toolkit, and that will also be updated later this spring. So our focus for today is the Digital Instructional Materials Acquisition Policies for States, and that is a mouthful, and therefore we do shorten that to DMAPS. This is an online database, and it provides details on policies and practices related to the acquisition of digital instructional materials. I will go over all of the general topics. There are multiple subtopics that we encourage you to dig into the site itself to learn more, but we will do some overview highlights today. The focus of this site and this resource is really to highlight the importance of state leadership. Every state is structured differently. Most states are local control in some way, shape, or form, where the schools or districts are making their own decisions. However, oftentimes the states are providing leadership. Leadership is demonstrated in very different ways. Some states provide a review process for instruction materials. Whether or not the districts are required to adopt those materials, they still provide the leadership of that process and adoption list of high quality materials. Other states provide opportunities for statewide contracts that districts can purchase off of in purchasing consortia. In some states, there are more regional groups, whether they're intermediate units or BOCES, where the state is in encouraging or help supporting those intermediate units so that regionally within a state, schools and districts can come together for reviewing materials, purchasing materials, in a more efficient manner. States also help support partnerships, whether they can partner with a service provider or content provider to provide resources statewide. Many states host resource repositories where they have curated multiple resources that then schools and districts have the option to leverage. And this is very helpful. As a former classroom teacher, going beyond Google is a much better way to search and vet materials. It's nice to know that there are resource repositories out there that have vetted materials and teachers can feel comfortable about implementing those supplemental resources. And then other states provide support for the digital instructional materials implementation through their state networks. Having efficient and effective broadband is critical in order for digital materials to be accessible by all students. Similarly, devices are important. And so some states, not all, have some type of device, whether a grant program or a statewide initiative to help support that implementation. And many states are embracing the concept of open educational resources. Some states are Go Open, which is a national initiative by the U.S. Department of Education, and others are kind of plugging along locally, working within their state with their teachers and schools to either develop or vet open educational resources. So this project is so important to all of us because states are so different. We wanted to make sure that we incorporated and leveraged the expertise of leaders from across the country and from across departments and agencies within states. Therefore, we did work with the state digital learning leaders, our kind of primary or CETA members, but then we also worked with the state instructional materials contacts and actually SIMRA, the State Instructional Materials Review Association, is a CETA affiliate organization, and we work with them very closely so that our members, the digital learning leaders, and the instructional material contacts are connecting with one another. We also have a partnership with the AIM Center regarding accessible educational materials, and we worked with those contacts so that we could incorporate policies and practices around the accessibility of content. And then finally, we work with the private sector leaders. CETA has annual and event partners. Our annual partners have the opportunity to engage and help develop CETA resources, including providing input on the content and organization of this site itself. So it truly was a collaborative effort to help make the resource as robust as possible. For those of you that have visited dmaps.ceta.org in the past. We have multiple new features, which I will highlight momentarily. One is the fact that we had so much content that we have split that content into three tabs at the top, and I will show that information just shortly. We've also reorganized and relabeled some of the data elements to make it a little clearer on what we're talking about and make the information more accessible to everyone. We also added the option to share via social media. And so we hope that some of you are able to leverage that content. In the content area, we expanded details and provided more narrative on the procurement instruction materials review processes for each state, because many times, you know, a yes/no question or a specific data element doesn't show the true picture. So we added some content and functionality to provide descriptions. We also included that inclement weather policies, because if states have the option for schools or districts to leverage home access and digital learning days from home when there's inclement weather, perhaps like the Northeaster from yesterday, then students would not have to make up those days. However, then clearly everyone needs access to that content and they need access to digital content outside of school. In addition, we included some details about the online course requirements and out-of-school access requirements. We've also added exemplars and some example RFPs. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and share my screen and so that I can dig in and show you the content itself. Okay, this is indicating that you can see my screen. So this is a dmaps.ceta.org. We're actually on Nevada's page, so I'm going to go ahead and go to the homepage. And on the homepage, you can see there's quite a bit of information. Most important, I would tell you that on the left-hand side, there are multiple topics, and under each topic, there are multiple subtopics. Part of the reorganization of the site is now we have all definitions in one place. Then here, all guidance and policies and state statutes in another spot. We include additional details about the state review process and what it includes and where those materials are posted. Then we have digital learning resources, information on funding, whether or not state has dedicated funding for instruction materials, and then specific details on procurement practices. And then finally, as CETA, our members felt that was important for everyone to understand the digital learning initiatives within the state. So we do provide information about digital learning planning, digital learning standards for students, and requirements for districts. So if you're interested, for example, in knowing how many states have a definition for instruction materials and you click on that definition, that data element, you can see here all of the states in green do have a definition for that. And if you want to dig a little bit deeper and also know who has a definition for accessible instructional materials, then these two data elements will overlap and you'll know which states have both of these requirements. And if you want to switch gears, you just have to go to the top, clear all the selections. Also, there are, you can learn a little bit more about states and states that are similar to you via the heat map. So here you can see the states as organized by the number of students, how many schools states have, and or how many LEAs states have. Then if you're interested in a particular state, so I'll use Texas as an example here, you can review details about any state. When you click on View Details, you will automatically land on the Instructional Materials page. And this is where you'll see an overview, and then you can expand all of the data elements. And you can see here that Texas is fairly robust and has quite a bit of content. Not all states have this many policies and practices or details, but this is a nice comprehensive view. And then if you're interested more at the overview at a glance on digital learning, click the at a glance page, and this will tell you about their digital learning plans or any requirements or standards they have. And then finally, the other feature is the fact that we have a procurement tab. So here, all details related to guidance for publishers, master contracts, and pricing negotiations, anything specific to procurement is available here on the procurement tab. Please note that on the top right-hand corner, there's a button that says Request Changes. So although we just completed a comprehensive refresh, that does not mean that state policies and practices change all the time. Folks are in session right now. Things may change. So states always have the opportunity to request changes to their data. And even if their URLs change, anything simple, that's through this form, then you have the opportunity to print. And then here you can download, specific to the tab, you can download procurement details for just the state or for all states. And then finally, you can share these details via social media. Now on instruction materials, similarly, we've broken down so you can download just the instruction materials data sets. It was, as you can see, there's a lot of information and one large download for all states became pretty cumbersome. In addition, we have highlighted multiple exemplars from districts across the country. If you're a district and you don't see yourselves on this page and you think that you should be, then I would contact your state leader and share a summary of how it would be great to share highlights of what you're doing. They're just short narratives, but they give some nice quality examples. And then we do have multiple RFPs related to instructional materials or platforms, depending on the state and what they've shared with us or what we found. And finally, we have some background information on the project and multiple resources if you're looking for details on how and why digital learning and digital instruction materials are critical. You can access those here. And finally, we do have a glossary of terms as there are so many terms related to this that may be unfamiliar to some. I was showing the comparing states where you can choose multiple states, and then you can see how your state compares to other states around the country. And then you do have the opportunity to download these particular states or all states. So for those of you in the research mode, this may be helpful as well. If you're looking to dig in more deeply to particular states, you can just scroll down and choose whichever state is of most interest to you. This is just a different way to get to a state's data set versus the map. Okay, so I'm going to stop screen sharing now because I want to provide the opportunity definitely to hear from our state leaders and then also potentially to answer some of the questions that may have come up. But and so what I'll do is look at the questions while our other presenters are speaking, and then I can respond to those as well as respond to them at the bottom. So I'm going to invite Andre to share his screen. Great. Welcome. I see you there. So Andre is an education program professional for the Nevada Department of Education, and he is a member of the Standards and Instructional Support Team. He also is primarily responsible for the science education and instruction materials in Nevada, and he has been a classroom teacher, a school administrator, and a school board member. And I will say from the CETA side, Andre joined us through our partnership with CIMRA as a affiliate member, and he's been very instrumental in supporting both this and other projects related to instructional materials, and he's also just a state leader that's willing to share. So we're happy to have him and appreciate him donating his time to share more about Nevada's processes for supporting instructional materials today.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to I try to live up to that introduction. Good afternoon to everybody on the call, except for those of us in the West. Good morning. So let me just kind of take you into how our instructional materials investment, I guess, and also in our students that takes place here in Nevada. So first of all, I'm going to leave my contact information while I kind of do this intro. We're in a process of going through a transition in regards to instructional materials for a lot of reasons, but mainly to get into the 21st century as the driver. And so, you know, ever since the dawn of man and education, everything has been in a written form, written down from the back of a shovel with a piece of coal to printed material, and instruction evolved into a bigger thing than I think a lot of people anticipated, and we have to move with that. And that's basically the driver behind looking at our process and trying to evolve it. So the overall purpose of our process is to looking at flipping the process. Instead of taking the mystery out of what will get approved and what won't get approved and what's behind the review process, we wanted to create a transparency and provide clarity for our partner school districts who are very instrumental in the implementation of these materials. So it just made sense that everybody should know about the process, as opposed to having it the way we've had it, in which districts initiate the review of instructional materials. They do their local level review and open it up for public comment and get feedback from the various stakeholders that must be in their review groups. And then they submit it to the state, who then makes a recommendation to the State Board of Education while they sit there with their fingers crossed, hoping that it gets through. So we kind of wanted to eliminate and make this more of a partnership, so that we flip it and they participate in the state level process of reviewing the materials, and then we create a list in order for us to have it at one place, an easy access place, our website, so that everybody is on the same page of what approved instructional materials we should use to for our building our curriculums. So I kind of outlined that all that background comes from our laws that exist in our, what we call our NAC, National Nevada Academic Code. And it outlines basically that process that I just talked about. So it, like I said, starts at the district level, moves to the state level, and then hopefully if material goes through, provides a list of approved state materials for each district. And let me just add also that once one district goes through the process of initiating a review for an instructional material and it gets approved, all districts can use that material. So it doesn't have to be each district going through that process over and over again. So in looking at this, it produced kind of what, sometimes you have aha moments. This created more like a wait a minute moment, because when we looked at our process, we saw that our code was only looking at the adoption of textbooks. And we weren't really delving into, you know, the scope of what instructional materials are and what they could be. And we also were not looking at bringing in technology in any type of meaningful way in this conversation. And so it just kind of created a number of, hey, you know what, we need to address this, and we need to address this, and we're not addressing this, and we need to. So this is the part of the presentation where it pays to organize, because meanwhile, my wife was working on a project to bring access to technology to every student in Nevada in a one-to-one program, also working on building a statewide broadband system to provide a connectivity to all the classrooms in our state. And, I mean, my wife's pretty amazing. She does a lot of, she never does one thing at a time. She looks at the whole problem. And out of that work came this this program called Nevada Ready 21, where students were given access to technology in the form of Chromebooks with a platform, a digital platform that allowed them to use it in meaningful ways. So it took the focus off the teacher so much to drive the learning and let students become drivers in their own education. And the data supported looking at education and instructional materials this way. And so the result was real life problem solving through the use of digital platforms, and the teachers were able to become more facilitators in the process as opposed to having to drive education themselves. And so it just became like a win-win for everybody. And if you take a look at this slide here, that's my son and my mom. My son at the time was in eighth grade, and my mom was in an auto accident in which she injured her wrist. And my son, through the use of the Chromebook and the diving in and finding some resources, was able to make her a ball that she could use to squeeze it. Actually, she wound up using throughout her physical therapy. So, I mean, the possibilities through this marriage between, not just between my wife and I, but also this marriage of instructional materials and digital platforms like Nevada 21, just kind of opened up the instructional possibilities and educational opportunities for students, and also really shined a light on the fact that we really need to look at bringing our process into the 21st century. And so these conversations have now made us look at instructional materials as more of a system as opposed to just a book. And then it also allowed us to take stock on what's really working and what do we need to change, what do we need to move out, what do we need to look into, so that we can really, and this, I think this is the more important thing, is we can truly empower our students in their own learning so that they become the drivers, and with guidance, of course, but also that it becomes not about just a sage on the stage situation, but there's true conversation, there's true give and take, there's true feedback. And then things like ability to education really become drivers in the process, as opposed to something that we look at after the fact and realize we're not addressing. But the most important thing is, that last bullet, support. We have to constantly support this process and grow this process so that we can truly take instructional materials into the 21st century and beyond, like my little Buzz Lightyear icon would suggest. Hopefully I'm not committing copyright infringement. So that's basic. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. No, I had a question for you when you're done.
No problem, because that's actually basically really all I had to say as far as how we're looking at instructional materials here in Nevada. I hope that kind of spawns conversations about how we can in this process. And I'll take any questions anybody has.
Sure. So, Andre, this is Christine. I'm just wondering, as the light bulbs went off at the department about your review of instructional materials that shifted beyond the textbook, how did your LEAs and schools take that? Were they ready for that shift? Or were they maybe ahead of the state a little bit and they had already been implementing digital? Or how did the things fall out?
Well, that was kind of that's the amazing part of the product. You know, you always have people who have different comfort levels, but it was amazing. Like, I'll point to our local school district here, Carson City School District. We had some great conversations around that process I was talking about, looking at instructional materials as more than a text, but looking at it as, you know, a source of information, but then also providing that ongoing support to not only just the students, but also to the teachers too, because you have to look at these materials as not just a material, but also a professional development process. And so when they started looking at digital materials specifically, I'll call out a program like Amplified Science that Carson is moving forth for adoption, that really took advantage of the one-to-one program that they had initiated through Nevada 21, and then really allowed them to take a look at instructional materials to kind of take advantage of that technology, so that it wasn't about just getting computers in the hands of students and then handing them a textbook in the same after. It was more about really exploring how instructional materials can be more of an educational process than what we've done, you know, previously.
Great. Okay. And then I have one more follow-up question, and we'll hear more from Florida. In Nevada, are the districts required to make their purchases off of your adoption list, or is there an exemption opportunity? How does that flow?
So the way that works is that, and like I said, we're undergoing a transition, but in the here and now, districts initiate the process and then they submit that to the Department of Education, us, and then we do the same review they do and make a recommendation to our State Board of Education whether or not to adopt. Now, and like I said before, we're really going to work to flipping that process so that we have our district level experts in on the process with us, so that it kind of takes the mystery out of, you know, will it make it, will it not? And then also really address that process that an instructional material should be making use of, you know, leveraging things like digital platforms.
Right.
And just a quick add on, I know you spoke about OERs earlier. We haven't really addressed that, and we believe that this process can help us move into how to looking at OERs in a meaningful way.
Great. Right. Okay. So we encourage you to post questions, additional questions. I do see some DMAP specific questions, and I'll address those after our next speaker. But I'd like to thank Andre for his information and insight, and we look forward to further discussion. And then just to engage the audience, thinking about your own school or district or even your state, what proportion of instructional materials are digital versus print? You know, are you in a place where there's been 100% digital materials, you've made a complete shift? Are you 50-50? And I think we'll probably be a little bit all over the place. So if you just put that response in the chat question, it'd be interesting for some informal data sets for us. Looks like we have a few 50-50. Some folks are just at 20-80. And a lot of this probably depends a bit on the access, right? You can't shift to digital if you don't have the bandwidth or the devices available. So in Nevada, they have Nevada Ready 21. That was a great way to support that transition to digital materials. Interesting. So we just had a couple of people that were 100%, and then we have some that are fairly low at 10 or 20%. I know that that shift, as Andre said, is also very dependent on administrators and professional development opportunities for teachers. So when the devices are available and perhaps the materials are available in a digital format, they have to have that comfort to be able to implement in that way. And a lot of times be willing to let go. We're going to shift a little bit now, and I'd like to introduce Allison Hart from the great state of Florida. I'm a native, so I can say that. And she's an instructional material specialist with the Bureau of Standard Instructional Support at the Florida DOE. And in this role, she works to support the policies and procedures for Florida's instructional materials adoption. And prior to this, she was in the Division of Educator Quality, and she's an experienced classroom teacher and also a Florida native, as well as a Florida State Seminole. So proud to have Allison today. And I'm going to turn my camera off and let us learn more about Florida's processes and policies and practices.
All right. I don't know if everyone can see me because I can't see myself. Okay, but thank you for having me on today. I wanted to start by kind of going over the review process that we follow in Florida. So while we still have the option to adopt print materials, we only review major tool materials, and they have to be provided digitally by all publishers. So we actually don't review physical textbooks. Everything comes to us digitally, which is great. It makes it really easy and the process move a lot smoother. We are a little bit different from Nevada in that we are local control, and we have reviewers from all across the state who are assigned the bids, and we have two reviewers per material, and then if one reviewer recommends the materials and the other one doesn't, then we bring in a third tie-break reviewer. They have 21 days to review all of those materials. They have their own special logins. They view the same things that the teachers and students will ultimately be looking at if the materials are purchased. And once they are all submitted, we compile them together for the commissioner to make the final adoption decisions. So most of those come from materials that are recommended by reviewers, but some of those, you know, there's a little bit of leeway. As long as they meet our standards and are good materials, most of the time those end up getting adopted. Local districts have complete purchasing decisions and that power. Hang on one second. Let me get my webcam going back for you. Still doesn't seem to be working. But I will carry on. So local decisions for their purchasing are all made at the local level with the school board. We don't have digital materials as a requirement anymore in Florida. However, districts are moving forward. A lot of them have already incorporated going fully digital in their purchasing decisions while still having some print. We really are still kind of pushing towards that digital aspect because, you know, everything that we review is digital. So most of the time, what the districts are going to adopt is also digital. And we can give some guidance as far as, you know, really just what the adoption list is. Everything else is totally local control. So they do have some flexibility. As of this past December, instructional materials funds were provided to purchase those electronic devices and technology equipment for, you know, what the schools need. So a lot of the districts are moving forward and taking advantage of that, which is great. And I will be focusing on some of those districts in just a few minutes. Our schedule, we take a full year to review everything, but we have our specifications that come out in the fall, winter time, and then in April of the following year, all of our intents to bid are due. It's open to any publisher as long as they feel like they meet the requirements of the adoption through the specifications that we post, then they are more than welcome to bid their materials. In May, those bids are due, completed, and then in July, we receive our digital samples. And then our review process starts in August. So that lasts a few months, again, because we have reviewers all throughout the state, teachers, administrators, as long as they meet the requirements for the specific subject that we're adopting, they can be a reviewer. They have to apply and then are approved and assign their bids. So once they complete that process, our final adopted list is done around the spring or summer, because we have to allow all of those reviews to be completed and come in. And then on April 1st of that following year, the adoption or the materials that were adopted are contracted and start. The districts do have to make those selection materials the spring, summer that the adopted list is finalized. And the majority of our districts go off of the state adopted list. They do still have the 50-50 option where 50% of their materials are required to be off the state adopted list, and then 50% of their materials do not have to be. However, they do have to provide a justification for those materials, however they best fit into their curriculum and their intended use. They just have to submit that to their school board and can move forward with those purchases. Here's a quick view of our adoption cycle. So we are currently in the middle of science. We are finishing up with those reviews right now. We have our math specs out and are currently working on finalizing those ELA specifications, which we hope to have out soon as well. So we go on a 5-year cycle. We just did social studies last year, so you can see again in 2021 where that will pop back up. All right, so we have a few districts that I was able to get in touch with. In Florida, we have over 60 districts, so there's quite a range of size and funds available and resources available to these districts, and many of them are taking advantage of what they have, knowing, you know, how far they have to make it go. Pinellas County is a good example. They're using a blended model, so they're not fully digital yet just due to their size and resources. So some of their schools are one-to-one, however, and they have digital accessibility for those students and schools currently without enough computers. They're trying to add those devices as they receive those extra funds, wherever they can find them, to hopefully move towards all their schools being fully digital. The intensive courses, however, and the high school reading, in middle school math and high school reading are some of the courses that are fully digital at this time. And they're still, like I said, moving towards that digital platform of instruction, hopefully within the next few years. One of our largest districts, Miami-Dade, is a great example also. They have their digital convergence plan currently set within their high schools. These are going fully digital, integrating mobile devices, whiteboards, streaming media, different digital content through iPads, things like that. One of their projects that they're not the only district doing this, I know Broward is another one who's incorporating this Sprint 1 Million project to bridge that gap of students who do not have devices like smartphones or even Wi-Fi at home. They are providing, starting in ninth grade, through the entire time that they're enrolled in high school up to 4 years, free Android devices, as well as the 3 gigs a month data, and it can work as a hotspot so that you can use Wi-Fi, access all their school materials at home, and they also have the option to download and use their materials offline so that they can, you know, if they miss a day of school, if they don't, if something happens, you know, like weather, they can access everything. Even if they don't have a computer, they have this free phone that they can do everything from. And they have, their link is digital.dadeschools.net. Their whole digital convergence plan is listed on there, and they can definitely go back and check more about what they have to offer. Orange County is another example on how they're using digital learning. They have their classrooms are moving towards being fully digital. Launch ED is a program that they have going on throughout their district. It's really putting the students in that world of being fully digital and you know, just getting used to interacting with each other through that way. Bring Your Own Device is another program that not only Orange County is using. They are outfitting students with these devices. However, students can also bring their own device, get it set up with the school so that they can utilize their own devices at home and at school for their schoolwork. A list of some full Bring Your Own Device schools are listed here. Aloma Elementary, Audubon Park Elementary, Sunrise, and Windermere. Notice they're all elementary schools, so they're getting started pretty early, which is great. And then all of their other Launch ED sites are partial Bring Your Own Device schools. And like I said, they're not the only district doing this. We're starting to see this more throughout the state. As devices are becoming more affordable, this is also a growing program. If you have any other questions, feel free to email me, call me at any time. There's a lot more information, you know, that is coming up daily, really, from districts and new information that we'd love to share. So this is my contact information. I highly recommend you also go to our website. We have our policies and procedures set out there, as well as statutes and everything that refer to our digital instructional materials.
Allison, this is Christine. Thank you so much. There are a couple of questions. There's a few questions in the chat, and one of was for both you and Andre, and Andre was able to, while you were talking, post the link, but folks are interested in the specific review process. So I shared some from Quality Content's our site. I think this link that you had in this last slide, I just added that in the chat because, you know, other states and or schools or districts might want to leverage that process.
Yes.
Specifically for Florida, one of the questions was for the appropriations 91 funds. You mentioned that there's the option for equipment and infrastructure, but Hilly from California would like to know if digital instruction materials can also be purchased with those funds.
So the digital instructional materials, those come from their own source. So that would double under the instructional materials funds that the districts are allocated. So in Florida, we don't specifically have it listed as digital instructional materials. It's just a blanket instructional materials that right now they can purchase print or digital from. It's that just most districts are choosing the digital formatting.
Gotcha. Really helpful. Thank you. And then if there's other links about your review process and you want to put those in the chat, that would be great. Question, I'm glad the video's up for both. So I'll let you answer this one first while she's looking, is how does Nevada address the accessibility considerations for instructional materials?
It's an ongoing process because what we found is we have to keep doing a better job. And what we do in that link where I shared the rubrics, one of the categories specifically addresses accessibilities so that we make sure that instructional materials, digital and otherwise, provide access and equity to all our students. And it's not it's so so that geography, ethnicity, socioeconomic background, gender identity, identity, and other factors don't become a limiting factor for students.
That's great. And I know the AIM Center, and every state has an AIM contact. So I just put the AIM Center link to your state contacts in the chat. We also link to accessibility contacts for each state and highlight those policies and practices. Typically, a state either has their own or they've adopted a federal definition based on the IDEA. We hope that all states are addressing these concerns. I don't know if you have anything to add, Allison, about the accessibility for all learners.
We do have when our publishers submit all their bids, they have a checklist that they do kind of have to list their accessibility options. There's a questionnaire that they have. It's provided to the publishers. It's not on our website, but they do have standards that they have to meet with that as well.
Great. Okay. Then I see a question from Susan about wondering about any district, regional, or state purchasing for online database subscriptions. So I'm not sure. I know that we didn't collect that data. In some states that have resource repositories, which I'll put the link up for that, those include sometimes subscription-based, but I don't know if Florida or Nevada provides those statewide.
In Florida, we don't. That would, again, be if a district wanted to purchase that, they would just have to work directly with whatever company was providing that. They could use their other 50% of those funds that are allocated to them that are not state adopted for something like that.
And similarly, Nevada doesn't have anything like that either at the state level.
Okay. And some states do, helpful to know. And I did just put up a link so you can see the states that have resource repositories. Typically, if they have a statewide online database tool, they may include it as part of that resource repository. So I just put that link up. Okay, we had a question from Robert in New Hampshire. And that question is, does DMAPS include a state consortium state where there's state library, academic, and public libraries pooling resources to purchase academic instruction materials for all patrons in that state? And here at CETA and through this project, we have truly focused on K-12. And any consortia information we included was, were there consortias across the state or regional consortias within the state? For example, Pennsylvania is a state that is has intermediate units, and oftentimes they help structure or may have some purchasing consortias or sharing specifically, but we haven't branched out to what the libraries are providing or vetting, nor have we for all patrons of the state. But that's something to consider. So thank you for that question. And I'll try to squeeze in one more if there's another question here. O'Hilly was asking about the 50% reference that you referenced. So just Allison, quickly, I think.
Yeah. So the 50% is in reference to the districts have to use 50% of their allocated instructional materials funds on state adopted instructional materials. And then 50% of those funds do not have to be state adopted instructional materials. Those can be anything. They just have to provide a justification for that purchase to their local school board members. So we review digital materials at the state level. So those 50% of state adopted are going to include digital materials. We just don't specify that. They're just instructional materials. But 50% just have to be state adopted, and then 50% they can choose from anywhere if they wish.
Great. Okay, well, we're just coming to the top of the hour, and I know there's more to share. I know with DMAPS, as you can see, there's so many different data elements. We can have another webinar and kind of dig into one area or the other, but we're excited about the fact that we've relaunched, we've reorganized, we've added more details and content so that it is most useful for all of you. There was a question earlier about how can we have more examples in there. You can email them to me. My email's here. We'd love to have more examples and details. We also are always interested in other data elements that might be helpful to both the public and private sector. So I want to thank Andre and Allison for their time. Presenting on a session like this takes time to prepare as well as blocking up the time in their day. So we're truly appreciative of hearing the perspective. I'll just get to a couple of logistics here. I would encourage you to join us for our next webinar. It's on interoperability. So shifting topics, however, it is great when all tools in a state are working together so that having content and data sets that are interoperable is critical. And again, we can continue this conversation by joining the Essential Elements for Digital Content on edweb.net. You can access all of our previous webinars as well as some conversations that are ongoing around accessibility. We had an accessibility expert in the month of February sharing examples of key considerations. So I'd encourage you to check that out and join us for future events. Again, for your certificate, if you pre-registered and you logged in, you will be emailed your certificate. And then you will need to take the quiz only if you joined without logging in today or you're watching the recording. And then you will receive it after you've taken a very short quiz. Again, one more plug for the community. The other thing that will be posted there is a slide deck. And that slide deck actually also includes some screenshots of the site. That was a security measure for us today in case my broadband wasn't as efficient. But it also is a nice way for you to see highlights of the site that you may have forgotten without having to rewatch the whole video. So thank you, everyone. I'll stay on and you can post in the chat. And I want to again thank Andre, Allison, and the EdWeb team for your support today. Have a great afternoon or day for those on the West.
Thank you, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.